Owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it, says scholar and storyteller Dr. Brené Brown. She goes on to say, embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Listen in as the Reverend Verzola Law, senior pastor of Lindenwood Christian Church, discusses a theology of human vulnerability and divine strength. I am the Reverend Broderick Greer, curate at Grace St. Luke's Episcopal Church, and this is Theology Live, a contemporary theology series. So this is Theology Live, episode 4 at Alchemy in Memphis. And our guest is Pastor Verzola Law, senior pastor of Lindenwood Christian Church. Welcome, Pastor Law.
It's good to be here.
Thank you for being with us this evening. Your topic this evening is human vulnerability and divine strength. Mm-hmm. Tell us why you picked that topic.
I am glad to be here with you all and glad to be a part of a faith that is growing in a community that is still yet becoming. Being in Memphis, Tennessee, and all of the history that Memphis brings with it, and showing up in the world looking as beautiful as I am, beautiful being female, and as sun-kissed as I am being African-American. And then to add insult to injury, or to add wonder to challenge, being called to serve in a male-dominated profession. And so I just woke up one day when I was 15 years old and decided to say yes to God, which meant that I was saying no to a lot of other opportunities that were afforded to people who look and move around the world similarly as I do. And so I had to fall down a lot. I had to eat a lot of dirt. We are human, made of dirt, humus. And so was told things like big boys don't cry. And girls should always look pretty. We should do things like wear slips, even when it's 100 degrees, when it's hot outside. And we should always just, when someone asks, how are you doing, your response should be, I'm okay, even when you're feeling like feces. And so
that's a nice way of saying it.
And so so I thought it was important as I think about my own journey to talk about what it really means to be human and to be vulnerable in this season of Advent, a season of preparation and expectation, a season of waiting, because I've had to do that. I live in a culture where we speed things up, hurry up, go. It's a rat race, and then it's like, wait. Every door you get to, a wait. And so saying yes to God, saying yes to church, and living in this community, I thought, well, let's talk about something hard. It's good to talk about something easy and wonderful, and I like to do that, so you can invite me to do those things. But I want to talk about something hard, and that's vulnerability, because we're taught to hide, to cover up how we are and what we're feeling. But I want to talk some more about vulnerability.
So how do you define vulnerability?
Coming in touch with what I feel in my deepest form on my worst day. I had some real vulnerable moments this week. I'm senior pastor at a pretty nice-sized church, and everything is all together. Everyone's all together. And then we're hit with what most people are hit with at the end of the year, and that's budget. And so that makes us very vulnerable. Very vulnerable. Getting ready to preach on Sunday mornings, and the sermon always comes together on Thursday, and it was Saturday 2 weeks ago, and it was a nothing coming from nowhere, from God or the devil. I couldn't, I didn't have a word. And so I am begging God for a word. And so vulnerability hits again. And so they're just different things that come along, and in my authentic self, when I have conversation partners that want to have the vulnerable conversations, I find I'm really stronger. But when we move around in the world, we're told to hide, to keep from saying how we're really feeling. And so I have been pushed to talk more about times where I'm vulnerable and being more transparent about that than faking like it's always all good.
Now, as a woman of color, as a Black woman, as an African American, as a pastor, I would think that it would be that you've probably received messages that said, you need to be twice as good. You Sure. need to be perfect. You need to always put on a great face, even when everything under the surface may be chaotic. How do you live with those messages while also you want to live out this authenticity, this vulnerability?
I remember when I was in the elementary school and going up in high school, middle school and in high school, my best friend is biracial. So she is a fair-skinned African-American woman, thin and tall, and I am not. And so we would go to clubs, or we would go, pastors go to clubs. Yes, I would go to clubs. And I would go hang out, and the guys would always go to her. And then the guys who would come to me would be like, "Who? I want you to be my sister. I want you to be my best friend so they can get to her." So I was always in that situation. And so I would find myself reading more, studying harder, just to feel to be like I was accepted in both social settings as well as academic settings. And so I excel academically, but socially, I was always someone's friend. I was never someone's girlfriend.
Wow.
And by the time I got to college, I thinned out some, and I, you know, wore more makeup and higher heels, and then the boys started hollering at me. And so I decided the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
I think that's a theology live first. Yeah, I love that.
That's a theology live first. And so it just made me very human coming in touch with that. And so I round that off with through the various phases of my becoming. I'm 42 now. And so about 2 years ago, my father was struggling with my natural hair. I don't have chemicals in my hair. I literally go back to its natural state about 10 years ago. And so my dad was like, "Well, baby, when are you going to straighten your hair again? I like it because I tend to have long hair and it's thick." And he's like, "Well, when are you going to straighten your hair again? And when are you going to lose some weight?" So this is from my father, who adores me, alongside the other people who didn't say it, but they would whisper. And I served an African-American church, and they were like, "Well, Pastor, you need to wear more brighter shades of lipstick, and you need to wear more Spanx."
Oh,
for those who don't know what Spanx are, those are the undergarments that suck life out of you. And so I would get all of these kind of suggestions about what I need to do about my physical. Well, I was encouraged with my emotional. You make me feel better about myself. I'm like, "Well, you ain't making me feel good about myself." And so I decided that I was enough.
Wow.
That I was enough. I didn't need the validation from anyone else to be who I was. I was created in the image of God, fearfully and wonderfully made. I was enough. And I had to let some things die so that God could be exalted high. Beyond my physical, beyond what the culture deemed what was appropriate. And so I began to move around even more so in my authentic self. So there were some days they're like, "Oh, Lord, what is Pastor going to look like today?" Because I might have an afro, or I might have braids or dashiki. You're like, "What is she going to wear today?" And so within a sense of understanding the boundaries, and, you know, people, I want them to hear the message of the good news. And so if I came in there, looking completely crazy, they couldn't hear it. But you know what I mean? I wanted to be able to express myself without all of these limitations that were being placed. Limitations are often placed on us. And so we come across as not enough. And I thought it was just me, but the more conversations I was having with our rich folk, poor folk, fat folk, skinny folk, I'm like, everybody going around, and they ain't enough either. And so I made a decision to be vulnerable, to be transparent, because I was enough in who I was.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, especially given the fact that we're in this season of Advent, mm-hmm. the season of preparation, mm-hmm. really a season of incarnation, sure. where we're waiting for God to take on human flesh, mm-hmm. it's important to be able to imagine God mm-hmm. in skin like ours, yeah. mm-hmm. and to be able to see people who look like us. Can you say a little bit about what it means to be yourself, yes. and how that vulnerability can be contagious for other people?
Because God is a black woman.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
I said that one day, and I serve a predominantly European congregation, and they kind of looked like, oh, okay, where's she going with this? But it is this sense that God is both how we see God, but God is beyond that. And so I travel across both the country and the world and amazed at the images of God, particularly from the Orthodox Greek. When I was in Israel, Palestine, and looking at the images in Israel, Palestine, but going to Catholic churches and the various ways in which they portray God so that persons who live in that community can kind of see more of an image of maybe even what Jesus more closely resembles based on that culture. And so I'm less concerned about the visualization of God than how humans portray and share the love and attributes of God with one another. And so I don't let these labels define me. I'm African American, I'm woman, I'm extrovert, but I'm crazy, I can be weird, I can be awkward, I can be all these other things. And so oftentimes these labels box us in and keep us from understanding who we are human to human. And so if we can't figure out who we are in our skin and who we are, there's even more challenge to get to our divinity, the sacred in one another, because we're so trapped by our physical limitations. So I push envelopes, as you can tell. I'm really watching some of my words so that that some things won't get recorded. But I feel like I'm with young adults. I might be able to say something crazy. But I'm just amazed at what we need others to be so that we can say that's God. Because once we say it's God, we cut conversation. Well, God told me this, or this came straight from God. That cuts the conversation. Well, I ain't gonna argue with God, so okay, that's good. So that helps me to kind of come to terms with how to say or understand or see God. And so I see God in still in small babies.
Wow.
And I see God, and I was with a 100-year-old woman on Thursday of last week. She's a superstar in her heyday, Maxine McCoy. And to be at her hospital bed, she still has her mind. So, and to celebrate this fragile, old, white female woman, and then to go to my niece, who is 2 years old, who is struggling with a seatbelt, learning to put her seatbelt on and off, and to understand both of them and their vulnerability. This 100-year-old woman, we put a crown on her, we put makeup, and she's like, I don't want too many pictures, because she wants to remember what she was and her 45 and 35-year-old self. And then my 2-year-old niece and her vulnerability, not being able to do this seatbelt. But so I get to live in all of these worlds and to see human vulnerability, but the divine strength that comes as we connect eye to eye, heart to heart, and struggle to struggle, and meet God in that place of vulnerability.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So what does that diversity of humanity tell you about the nature of God?
That God's creative. I mean, God is just absolutely creative to create something out of nothing, light and darkness, that God created both of those in the beginning, and God called all of it good. And so I just think about how creative, how courageous that is in the very mind of God to say, oh, let's do this, and for it to be and to call it something so that out of that, out of speech, something beautiful comes. And so how we speak to one another matters. Because speech creates life and death. And we see that from the very beginning, according to the Holy Word. So I think about a God being a creative God. I think about God being a strategist. I know we call God so many other things, but I think God is a strategist. I mean, how strategic is a God to put two African Americans of different generations in a room in Memphis, Tennessee, to have this many European Americans listening? I mean, this is not what is on TV. This is not what is on the radio. It's not even what's on Facebook, but it is what's happening.
Absolutely.
And I just think that only a God can be that creative and that strategic. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that just blows my mind to see how God works in spite of us and because of us. Yes.
That's amazing. And I am compelled by, and as you say that, I really am compelled by really the place in history that you are living in as the first African American and the first woman to pastor Lindenwood Christian Church. What does that say?
There was there was an interim who served 1 year as a female interim, but I'm the first one elected as a senior pastor and the first African-American in Memphis, Tennessee. I was born on April 4th, 1973. Martin Luther King was killed on April 4th, 1968. And my birthday was always stained by Martin Luther King was killed on this day. And I was like, I wasn't even born yet. Like, y'all act like that was my fault. And so I've always had this real kind of sadness in the midst of this beautiful day. And so this coming year, I've waited and I've delayed my installation so that we can mark that weekend with a race against racism, a race towards unity, to show the world something different and to redeem my birthday. Amen.
Amen.
So anyway, I was called and elected on this to this position on June 17th, on 2015. This is the same day as the Charleston shooting. At the time they were voting on me, around 6:30 p.m. Central Time, at 7:30 p.m., right around between 7:30 and 8 p.m., the shooting started in Charleston, South Carolina. And so my friend called that a spiritual eclipse that was happening. I knew that something different was happening in the world because I wanted to get excited. They were tweeting me. They were Facebooking me. Friends were at my house. But I couldn't get excited because there was something else going on. And so I am excited. I'm amazed at this creative, this strategic God, because there are different parts of my journey to prepare me for this moment.
Yes.
I've been uncomfortable in Memphis a long time. I love being in a church I was in, a predominantly African-American church, an amazing church, Mississippi Boulevard Christian Church. But I'd always dreamt of a Lindenwood, of a diverse church, but calling it to be even more diverse. And so I get to work alongside some of the most amazing human beings who, by all rights, parents were just downright racist, to parents who struggled through civil rights to make it a different world, to they themselves who are struggling. I serve alongside people who are nursery workers, who are some African-American women who, probably have never seen the doorsteps of a college. And so I get to be in all of that kind of diversity and to put God on it, that God supersedes all of those barriers, all of the ways in which the world and the culture will kind of define us and redefine us, and to put God on it. So I get to serve there, and they call me. I was saying crazy things like, we're going to have to change leadership when I come. The board is going to have to look different. Not maybe the first week or even the first year, but at some point, we're really going to have to look at how do we reflect more of this community in a way that makes room for the other. The seats used to be filled at Lindenwood, and now they're not as filled as they once were, But after I've been preaching and loving on some folk, we're getting filled again. And so it's been amazing to see how people are ready for something different to happen. And so while I was struggling with the segregation in Memphis, I now get to see Memphis with new lenses.
Wow.
I'm in different communities with different people. And it's so much more open and diverse than I saw it the first 12 years. I was an implant here from Houston, Texas. And so just a very different experience coming from Houston to Memphis. But I am, I'm in love. I've fallen in love again with Memphis and what it has to offer and what we can do as a community of faith to help change so many of the barriers and brokenness that exist in Memphis and surrounding areas.
And I would like to ask you that question. How do you, as a person of faith, as a religious leader, a visible pastor of a visible church, what are some practical steps in that direction of unity for a deeply broken city?
So one of the things that I do is what you all do. I just go eat with folk. Folk in Memphis like to eat. I mean,
that is very
you
true.
Gain when you come to Memphis, like you have the freshman 15, when you go to college, you get the, you know, you get like the freshman 25,
yeah,
you know.
I've had the Memphis 30.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's kind of what happened. And so I just break bread. I mean, I'm a Jesus freak. I just follow the model of Jesus. I mean, sitting down, breaking bread, when the wine runs out, turning water to wine, you know.
Those are the good stories.
Some tea or coffee or, you know, those kinds of things. But really sitting down, we're doing what we're calling a listening tour. And so I have an open calendar 2 or 3 days a week where I can come and meet you and just spend time with you. Hearing your story, you hear my story, human to human. Vulnerable person to vulnerable person. And one by one, I am discovering more about God as I share and hear these stories.
Yes.
A lot of times when pastors come to a church, you get with the big wigs first and your leadership groups, and then you are constantly trying to keep them happy that you can't see beyond what we would say at our church, the first 2 or 3 rows. You could only, so you spend a year trying to please people who are going to eventually might tear you down, as opposed to learning how to do the dance between the existing leaders and then those who are sitting on the pews. And so I'm discovering a lot about the church, about people, about God, and about our community, just going over coffee, dinner, lunches with the church and helping to hear their hopes and dreams. One of the things that I'm committing to doing, we're on Union and Parkway, is to talk about what does it mean to love out loud on Union, right in the middle of the city, just to love out loud with purpose on purpose.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And that human to human contact, that vulnerability sounds like it's in a very short time transforming Lindenwood, and it sounds like it has that potential to transform our city.
And the vulnerable piece is, again, a lot of senior pastors or even leaders, for that matter, come into a place and we have ego, we have so much skin in the game that we can't be vulnerable, so we can't be transformed. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going in there just to transform Lindenwood or transform Memphis. I myself am being transformed.
Wow.
Every day, every contact I make, I am changed by the conversations. I'm changed by the stories. I'm changed by others' sense of struggle and courage and faith and doubt and wrestling together till we get blessed. And so together we are being transformed into the images of Christ. So yes, it is something human to human, listening in and learning their stories. So, mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. And I think that there's something to be said about leading a church in that way. You know, not necessarily, I mean, having a vision, but not allowing an obsession with that vision to kind of steamroll everyone else's stories, and making room for that.
So one of the other pieces that we're looking at in terms of, again, going back to vulnerability and being enough, I woke up this morning saying I did not get enough sleep. Do I have a witness?
Yes.
It's the end of the day. I looked at my things to do list. I looked at my calendar and I said, I did not get enough done. And so we live in this culture of scarcity, of lack, and it comes to say that we just don't have enough. So not only did I not think I was enough all those years, or did I think I can accomplish enough, even though at this time in my life I've decided I'm enough. So the divinity then says that God is more than enough. Wow. And that's where the enough is. I'm already good. I'm already wonderful. I'm already smart. I'm already kind. I just got to tap more into that because I'll never get it done. My list have lists. Do I have a witness? I can't even find some of the lists that came with between post-it notes and iPads and phone and buzzers. And so as I think about the vision both for the church and what it means to work in a time of just great division and even greater divisions that are happening in our world, I want to just remind people just to back up from it a little bit, to let some things breathe, to allow some things to marinate. You know, speaking of marinate, you know, some food just tastes better the second day after it marinates, right?
Yes.
And so just letting it, just breathe, giving it some breathing room, breathing space, so that we can come back to some tables, back to some conversations, back to some visions that will be, that will have some sweet breath on it, and not the hostility that comes when I want my way and you want your way, and then we draw lines in the sand.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight. It has been an honor to have you. I've been really looking forward to this conversation, and you've offered so much to our community, so thank you very much. Thank you.
I would say one other thing,
okay.
And I want you to say this with me, because my church is trying to learn how to deal with me, but I need you to talk back to me. And so I want you just to say this with me. Say, I am enough.
I am enough.
Okay, now tell your neighbor,
you are enough.
All right.
Thank you so much, Pastor.
In this season of Advent, the season of God coming in the person of Jesus Christ, we are forced to face the reality of God's vulnerability, of God coming as an infant to an unwed mother and a reluctant adopted father. And in the next few months, when we enter the Holy Week liturgies, we'll be confronted with vulnerability again as we witness Jesus' scourging and crucifixion, his hanging on a Roman cross, embodying cosmic vulnerability. And hopefully, we won't gloss over that openness, that weakness. Hopefully, we will embrace it as we embrace our own vulnerabilities, offering thanks to a God who is willing to take every risk possible to engender infinite love. Theology Live is a ministry of Grace St. Luke's Episcopal Church, a welcoming community of faith in the heart of Midtown Memphis. This episode of Theology Live was engineered and edited by Noah Glenn, who also composed our theme music. Our Theology Live logo was designed by Andy Gill. We offer special thanks to our friends at Alchemy Memphis and our guest, the Reverend Verzola Law. Visit 901theology.com and follow us on Twitter @901theology for updates about our live events.